It's a rebound by Kamwa.
Come on, Kamwa. Let somebody else do something.
Wow. What an impressive performance.
Incredible.
Rocky Top is going to the Big Apple. And the countdown is on. 6 seconds difference. Game clock, shot clock. Kamwa has 17 of the last 19 points for Tennessee. 8-3 now. Filipowski, and that will do it. The Tennessee Volunteers are going to the Sweet 16.
Tennessee wins on Saturday. And that is not the tone that this show was taking. Stillman and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. That is not the tune that this show was talking on Friday when it came to the Vols and to Duke. This is what I said Friday. This Duke team, I'm not sure I've seen a team yet in the NCAA tournament that's as good as Duke. I'm not sure. I mean, I look at Alabama, and I look at Brandon Miller, and I think to myself, I'm not sure that Duke is not going to overpower Alabama with their big size in there against Miller. And now Tennessee, who played one of the ugliest basketball games I have ever seen last night without their starting point guard, now they're going to play that Duke team? I guarantee you, the way the two teams are trending and the matchup, I guarantee you Duke will beat Tennessee. I guarantee it. Well, obviously that didn't happen. So on Saturday, when Tennessee miraculously beat Duke, all of a sudden my Twitter went freaking bananas about, "You're so stupid. What do you have to say now? How about them Vols? Way to go." Joe Rexrode, who gave the Vols a 40% chance to win while I gave them a 3% chance to win, texted me and said 3% after Tennessee won on Saturday. So people want to know how I feel about it. Well, first, let's just say I was wrong. I was wrong. But I am incredibly disappointed with Duke. I thought Duke totally backed down. I thought they were looking for the refs to bail them out, to, you know, hey, these guys are pushing us too hard, these guys. And I knew right away that Tennessee had gone into this game and decided, you know what, we're going to beat the crap out of them. Like, that's what we're going to do. Because our team's not as good as them. But we might be tougher than them. So that's what we're going to try to do. And let me say this, of any part of the guarantee that was wrong, the part that was the most shocking to me about Tennessee's victory on Saturday is that is the best game I have ever seen Rick Barnes coach at Tennessee with those kind of stakes. I mean, I think it goes back, like even the SEC championship in 2019, the semifinals, they ended up losing the championship to Auburn. But the semifinals in 2019, like, it was the showdown at Bridgestone Arena between Kentucky and Tennessee. And this is back when Kentucky used to win games. And so Kentucky and Tennessee faced off on that Saturday, and it was a freaking war, and Tennessee found a way to win the game. But that's an SEC tournament game. If you lose, you still go on to the tournament. So what? You get a couple extra days of rest. If you win, you know, you have the pride of having beaten UK. But it's not the same as going to a Sweet 16. And Rick Barnes, who is normally Mr. Poopy Pants in a game like that, where they're wearing white jerseys, i.e. the higher seed in an NCAA tournament game, I thought had the best game plan I have ever seen him operate with. Even that year that they were really good, when they had Schofield and Grant Williams and Jordan Bone, and when they got into the tournament, they would play one good half of basketball and one bad half of basketball. They did it in the first round against, I think it was Colgate, where they had this big lead on Colgate, and then they blew it and it became a game in the second half. Then they played Iowa, and they had a big lead, and then they blew it, or they got down a lot, and they came back, and they won in overtime. Then they played Purdue, And they got blown out in the first half. They came back. They made it a game. And then Purdue ended up winning in the end of the Sweet 16. And in all of those tournament games, I thought Rick Barnes coached terribly. I thought that, you know, again, he never calls timeout when he needs to. He never, you know, the game plan is just always, we're going to do what we do, and I'm going to sit in my chair, and we're not going to have any specialized kind of game plan. This was, I thought it was just a masterpiece from Barnes. And I'll tell you why. John Shire's a rookie head coach. And all John Shire knows is the ACC. He played at Duke. He's coached at Duke as an assistant under K, and now he's the head coach. All he knows is Duke. That's it. I went to college at Louisville when we were in the Big East. And when we were in the Big East, that was back when everybody was good in the Big East, where we were getting like 8 or 9 teams in the tournament. Connecticut had a national championship caliber team. Syracuse had a national championship caliber team. Pittsburgh was a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. Villanova was incredible with Scotty Reynolds and Jay Wright as the coach. And Notre Dame was really good. And this Big East was just a freaking war back in the old day before football ruined it. And I will say this. I was on the radio when Louisville was in the ACC in 2014. It's not the same conference. Now, there are good teams in the ACC. Traditionally, this year the ACC sucks. But traditionally, there are good teams in the ACC. But as far as the level of battle is concerned, it's not the same. It's not the same, you know, war on the court that the old Big East used to be. It's honestly, you know, it's kind of frou-frou-y with the ACC. Well, Rick Barnes knows that because Rick Barnes is coaching the ACC. And so I think Rick Barnes just decided, hey, this is how we're going to play. And I'm going to make them call us out of this game. I'm going to make those officials knowing, and again, let's go back to Rick Barnes' history and how much experience that he has in this NCAA tournament. He knows they're not going to call this game like they would call a Tuesday night game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. He knows it. He knows that it's different in the NCAA tournament. This is how the Seattle Seahawks with the Legion of Boom became really, really good on defense. You know, outside of Earl Thomas, those guys couldn't run, right? Sherman couldn't run. Chancellor couldn't run. Brandon Browner couldn't run. But what they would do is they'd hold you on every play. Well, the referees are not going to throw the flag on every play. And so Tennessee decided, we're going to beat the hell out of them. And if they start calling flagrant ones, we're going to lose. And if they start calling every hand check and every arm bar, we're going to lose. But because it's the NCAA tournament, and CBS has a game to show after this, and the referees don't want to be a part of deciding the victor, they're probably not going to call it. And I thought that was a masterful game plan from Rick Barnes. And I thought John Shire, again, rookie head coach, and I think Shire's a good coach. I think he's going to be a really good coach at Duke. But a rookie head coach, doesn't have that NCAA tournament experience, only knows the ACC. I think Shire got caught with his pants down. And I thought Barnes exposed him. And normally I am used to Rick Barnes being the one who gets exposed in an NCAA tournament game. So when people want to say, what do you think now? I was freaking floored by Rick Barnes' game plan on Saturday. It was the perfect game plan. Because if he doesn't go in there and say, this is how we're going to play, and that has to be a mindset more than it is, you know, drawing up some things on the whiteboard. If they go in there and they just try to play with Duke, they lose. And he knows that. Well, if they foul everybody out, they lose too. So it's the same. But if the refs don't call it, because they don't call things like that in the NCAA tournament, then all of a sudden, Duke's going to be in a war. And I thought when Filipowski got cut and they didn't call anything, I thought, okay, Tennessee might be in business. Now, there were a couple of moments where I started to feel queasy about Duke. The first was on Thursday when Virginia lost to Princeton. No, excuse me, Furman. When Virginia lost to Furman, that made me a little queasy because Virginia was the second best team in the ACC. And Duke handled Virginia so well, I was impressed. But then Virginia loses to Furman? So that was the first one where I was like, oof. The second was when Chad Withrow came on this show at 5:30. We guaranteed at 4:45 that Duke was going to beat Tennessee. When Chad Withrow came on this show at 5:30 And he said, normally Tennessee is the team that has the pressure. And in this case, there's no pressure on Tennessee because without Zakai Ziegler in the lineup, nobody is expecting Tennessee to beat Duke. And I felt a queasiness in my stomach of, oh my God. Normally when Rick Barnes is grabbing the Maylocks, the role is actually reversed. And Chad was right. And Rick Barnes put together the best game plan I have ever seen from him in a big game with those kind of stakes at Tennessee. So I was wrong. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Now, I am disappointed at Duke. I expected better, especially with those big guys. And Jeremy Roach, I expected way better out of him. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. There was some complaining yesterday about Duke's loss. We'll get to that coming up next. And, of course, your phones. Stillman and Company. Hey, the Preds have a game tomorrow night. It's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. Brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. If you guess correctly, a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate in Pick to Click tomorrow morning at 8:45 with Robbie and Joe.
To say it was physical is probably understating it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a football game. And credit to Tennessee. They won the glass. They were stronger on the glass. They won the turnover battle and scored off those turnovers. And Olivia Kamwa had his best scoring game since he had 27 against Texas in that Big 12 SEC thing. I was really impressed with Tennessee. But they did it from the start. Juris Plavcic came in and leveled Kyle Filipowski on multiple plays. And it was the message sent. I thought when the officials didn't call a flagrant one mm-hmm. on one of those, they were basically saying, go ahead.
Yes.
And it was 40 minutes of that. And Duke just isn't built that way. And Tennessee is. And that was their game plan. And they executed it beautifully.
There you go. That was Jay Billis on ESPN. And I think that in all seriousness, I think that's the difference in the conferences. I think the ACC is a softer conference. Now, that doesn't mean the ACC is not good. This year, they're not. But it doesn't mean that the ACC is not good. Last year, Duke and Carolina were in the Final Four. And my guess is Duke and Carolina will probably be back at some point in the Final Four. But the ACC is a softer conference. And I watched the SEC battle it out that week. And I'm telling you, again, I went to an ACC now school that used to be in the Big East. The old Big East. The good Big East. Not the Creighton Big East. And I am telling you, that was a war in the Big East. Those were battles. The ACC soft. And I think Rick Barnes knew that. And the SEC, I think the SEC is the best conference in basketball this year. And honestly, I don't even think it's really all that close. Like, I think maybe you could make an argument with the Big 12. You know, even though we're seeing Big 12 teams lose, because I really do think Texas is a tough team. But this time of year, they do not call fouls the way that they call them in the regular season. But Seth Greenberg yesterday, my goodness, Seth Greenberg, and he did this twice. First, he did it on ESPN. Secondly, he did it with me on Sirius. But Seth Greenberg yesterday on ESPN, I think this is some talk out of both sides of the mouth. He says the officiating didn't have anything to do with the outcome of the game because Tennessee was the better team, but then went on and on and on about the officiating.
I'm not one to complain about officials, and Tennessee won this basketball game. They outplayed Duke in every aspect of the game. That was the worst officiated game I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, right from the first play, and not just coming from me. I was texting with a number of officials, a number of NBA people. They said that game was 10 times more physical than any NBA game that's been played in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. That went back to the 80s.
Went back to the 80s, 90s.
Exactly.
Yes.
You cannot redefine a foul. It's either a foul or it isn't a foul. And once you redefine a foul, you can't go back. And then the other side, I mean, Jeremy Roach should have been out of the game. They called a foul on Jeremy Roach. They switched it to Proctor. That game was horrifically officiated. Yet, Tennessee deserved to win and won the basketball game. Kamwa was absolutely terrific. But I'm all for playing defense, as you guys know. My teams are fairly physical, but the way the game is supposed to be played right now, forget about freedom of movement. There was no movement. It was in that you were not able to make to run any offense. Mm-hmm. Use of an arm bar, forget about it. You know, like to me, I should go back to coaching. I could coach that way.
Yeah.
That was a mugging. Cutters were bumped. Arm bars were used. Yeah. There was inability to run any type of offense. That was just a horrendously officiated game. And in this point, for any team, that's just not right. Mm-hmm. Tennessee won the game fair and square. I love their team. I love how hard they played, but that was horrific.
I love it, right? It's like, I mean, I'm not saying it hadn't affected the outcome. Olivia Comois was great. By the way, they never talked about Vescovy, who hit every big shot down the stretch. I mean, especially right before the end of the first half. The end of the first half is where Tennessee won the game. And yet it's, oh, that officiating was horrible. Not that I complain about officials. And, they didn't call fouls on Tennessee, and they messed up one on Duke, but it had nothing to do with the game, and Duke deserved to lose. But I'm just saying that game was so horribly officiated. Like, I know what he's saying, but it doesn't really sound like that's what he means. And a texter texts into the text line, or our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and said the absolute boo-hooing by the national media will get at least one Vol fouled out in the next game, probably two. I mean, honestly, like, I think Tennessee is going to win pretty easily against FAU. Here's the thing. Tennessee's bracket looked like a murderer's row when it dropped because you thought, well, Purdue, I mean, they're really good. Marquette, I mean, they are just. Duke, I mean, they're just. Kansas State, who we saw yesterday against Kentucky, and they should have lost. And, you know, it was a typical Calipari coaching performance in the NCAA tournament. I mean, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up because I think, you know, again, even though Rick Barnes coached the best game I've ever seen him coach in the NCAA tournament at Tennessee, this is still the same man who lost to Sister Jean. This is still the same man who lost to Wayne Tinkle in Oregon State. So I can't get too in front of myself here. But I think there's a chance Tennessee might go to the Final Four. I mean, I think there is a legitimate chance that Tennessee might go to the Final Four. And you bet your fanny that if Tennessee ends up in the Final Four, we will be having Matt Jones on this radio program before that happens. Let's go to Adam in Portland, who's up next and has been waiting patiently. 615-737-1025. Adam, go ahead.
You know what's funny, though? Like, I remember listening to a whole show, a four-hour show of you saying, should I put $1,000 on Tennessee to lose to Oregon State?
Yeah.
Should I put it that, like, the whole show was debating this.
$6,000.
You would have made a lot of money off of that. And the reason is because Tennessee was supposed to beat Oregon State. Tennessee was not supposed to beat Duke. This is exactly what they do. I've always said it, man. If somebody tells you who they are, you need to listen to them. Tennessee is great when they're not supposed to be, and they're pretty sorry when they're not supposed to be. So I expect them to lose to FAU. I wouldn't bet on it. If you're as confident as you are, you need to go ahead and pony it up. Do it this time, Jared, but I wouldn't. Like, I absolutely think they're going to fall flat against FAU.
They can't. I mean, did you watch FAU last night?
I did. And they have
one
good
player. Lose to that team, can they?
But it doesn't matter, man. That's what I'm saying. Tennessee has the ability to score 40 points in the night, like, because they're not very good on offense.
True.
So all it takes is just, like, being one step behind on defense, and they're done.
They're not going to lose. Thank you for the call, Adam. They're not going to lose to FAU. Now, if they end up playing, who would it be, K-State, likely, in the Elite Eight? I mean, Marquise Noel could go off like he did yesterday, and they could lose to K-State. I mean, that absolutely. And yet, at the same time, you know, I was thinking about this today, about UT and Rick Barnes. And the one thing I cannot get over is that Kentucky lost to South Carolina on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday or some day during the week. And all hell broke loose in Lexington. Like, it was like an unmitigated disaster. That everything, you know, the dam broke in Lexington on Calipari. Now, they can't fire Calipari because his contract's too much money. But they lost to South Carolina, and it was bad. And they played Tennessee on Saturday. And, I mean, people were out there reading the mourner's cottage for Kentucky at that point. And then Kentucky went on the road to Thompson Bowling Arena, which is one of the hardest places to play in the country, and they beat Tennessee. And then when they played them again later in the year, you figure, okay, well, Tennessee is going to be out for blood after what happened the first time they lost again. And I cannot get over how they lost to Kentucky. I cannot get over it. So maybe Adam's onto something. Maybe now the pressure's back on the Vols, and when the pressure gets put on the Vols, then Rick Barnes says Rick Barnes things. But I just think that that region, I mean, I think, what is it, Michigan State versus Kansas State
Correct.
Would be the team that
yep.
Tennessee would play in the Elite Eight? I mean, I feel like Tennessee can smoke the peace pipe and still end up playing one of those two teams. Now, I would not guarantee a victory over those two teams in an Elite Eight. Because what I saw from Kansas State yesterday was tough, and I think Tom Izzo, pound for pound, is the best basketball coach in the country. Maybe not still, but, you know, at least 5, 6, 7 years ago he was, and I wouldn't rule it out either. Man! But I know Tennessee fans have learned over the last 25 years not to get their hopes up. But I do think there's a legitimate chance the Vols end up in the Final Four. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll get back to your phones. Plus, Charles Barkley. We heard what Jay Billis had to say. We heard what Seth Greenberg was mad. What Charles had to say about how the Vols played on Saturday. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company right here on 1025-1063. The game. Speaking of the games, come see Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, followed by yours truly, live out at Central Barbecue in Hillsborough Village this Thursday, March 23rd. Come by for some great Memphis-style barbecue and catch your favorite teams compete in the tournament. Again, that's Central Barbecue in Hillsborough Village this Thursday.
Tennessee, they just showed how you can go out there and play a little bully ball and come out on top.
I always say about this, I love figuring out who can really coach. Because you have to have a game plan, especially when you have that quick turnaround. Like, okay, you know, we interviewed the coach earlier today from FDU. He says, I looked at the matchup, and I says, we got a good chance of beating Purdue because there's nobody in the Big Ten who play like we do. Yep. And I said, and I told you, I said, man, this dude know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And today you saw, now San Diego State's a little bit different. They just got big, strong, grown men.
And the same with Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's who they are.
Yes.
They did what they do.
Yeah. That was impressive. You talk about physically manhandling a team.
And Rick Barnes said it. We want to make them feel us. In one of the interviews during the game, between periods, he talked about we want to make them feel us every possession. Yeah. And they went out and executed that strategy.
Clark, shut up. Nobody wants to hear what you have to say. We want to hear what Charles Barkley has to say. But I do think it's funny that, you know, on ESPN, Jay Billis. Now, Jay Billis did not seem, in my opinion, like he was crying on behalf of Duke. Would you agree with that sentiment, Ian?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably fair.
I thought Jay Billis had a very measured take. Seth Greenberg felt like he was crying on behalf of Duke.
Mm-hmm, a little bit, yeah.
I mean, that was ridiculous. Barkley, you heard right there. Now, Barkley played in the SEC, and Barkley played in a different era. And Barkley also played in a different era in the NBA. And Barkley's like, that was great coaching. And I agree with Chuck. I mean, I have been as hard as anybody can be on Rick Barnes over the years. I mean, I was sitting there that game on Thursday night, that terrible game against that terrible Louisiana team that could not shoot, could not dribble, could not pass. They were allergic to the basketball and allergic to the hoop, and they were terrible. And I watched that game, and I watched Louisiana twice climb back in the game. And I'm looking at Rick Barnes, and he won't call timeout, which has always been one of my bugaboos. And now, every time he does that, I look up to the sky, and I think about, Floyd, are you watching Rick Barnes not call timeout? Because we used to argue for hours at a time about how Rick Barnes does not call timeout when things are not going well, does not, you know, that reset. You know, all of a sudden you hate doing it because the other team, you know, ends up exploding their way to the bench and their chest bumping it, but you have to do it. And you know the feeling when the ball goes in the air and you're just thinking, uh-oh, and you see it swish, you just turn around, timeout. You got to do it. And Rick Barnes won't do it. He will not do it. He is so against it. He just will never do it. It drives me crazy. But in this game, I thought Rick Barnes coached great. And the whole, like, oh, they were too physical, and that's a foul. Didn't hear that from Barkley. And didn't hear that from Clark Kellogg. Only know that because Clark wouldn't stop talking. I mean, Clark, just be glad you're on that crew. Because we don't tune in for you. We turn in for Chuck. And a little bit of Kenny. 615-737-1025. Texture says it's Duke. They cry more than any team in the country. Did Duke cry or did ESPN cry on Duke's behalf? I think that's the better question. I didn't watch John Shire's press conference after the game, but was John Shire doing a lot of like, oh, you know, you'll have to, I can't answer that question or else I'm going to get fined.
Can't
but
say
I
saw too much of that on Twitter from Duke themselves.
Right. It was just the people commentating about Duke.
Yeah.
That bitched about the way the game was called. So I don't have a, you know, with that.
But it sounds like a lot of these games have been pretty physical. Well, the tournament games in general, right?
That's how this tournament is. You know, Calipari will never play zone in the NCAA tournament. And his theory behind it has always been that when you get into the NCAA tournament, you're going to play against a team that can shoot. And when they shoot, you know, that's going to be a problem. But he's also always, you know, when they've lost games in November and December, Calipari used to always say, well, they're not going to call that in the tournament. And they call it differently in the tournament. I remember when I was at Louisville, right, in the women's Final Four. And we were getting ready to play Oklahoma. And Coach Walls told the team of the game, like, here's what's going to happen. They're going to call everything in the first 2 or 3 minutes because the referees are going to want to get on TV. So they're going to call a foul and they're going to go over there for the first 2 minutes, you know, and they're going to say bump 23 red, you know, whatever. But once the game comes down to the wire, they're not going to call it. They do not call it that way in the NCAA tournament. And you've got to coach according to that. And they coach it differently, and they ref it differently in the ACC because the ACC is a softer conference. I mean, the SEC this year has been a battle, and those teams are freaking battle-tested, even the teams that aren't that good. Like, I never thought Auburn was that good this year, but Auburn can battle with you now.
That is one thing about the SEC. I mean, those road games are tough. And so you get used to playing in some tough environments against very physical teams, very tall, long, lanky, athletic teams. So, like, when you go up against other, you know, they might not have the best record, the SEC team, but when you go up against other teams in the tournament, I mean, you're pretty much ready for any style type of game just based on the players that you have to go against week after week.
I'll tell you who I felt bad for watching this weekend. I felt bad for Jerry Stackhouse because that Vanderbilt team, that team could play with all these teams in this tournament.
Yeah.
Like, that team is tough enough to play in this tournament. And, you know, the SEC, it's just a different brand of basketball. Texter says the common thread is that all these guys are ACC commentators. They have no concept of anything other than Duke having games handed to them on a silver platter by the refs. I was legitimately waiting for Duke to get some questionable calls down the stretch that were going to go in Duke's favor. And nothing stands out. You know, maybe if I go back and I, oh, you know what? There was one when number 5 for Duke shot a 3. And I want to say it was Vescovy. I can't remember. Like, grazed his hand on the follow through. And they blew the whistle and they assessed a 3-shot foul. I thought that was ridiculous. And so I thought that was kind of a Duke one. Texter says it's like hockey. Get in the playoffs, let the boys play. The NCAA tournament has always been that way. Philip and Franklin must be a Kentucky fan because Philip texts in and says, Reeves, and he's talking about Antonio Reeves of Kentucky, who was one of 11 from the field yesterday, and I believe one of 10 from 3. Reeves missed every shot. Has nothing to do with the coach. Now, his last tweet, this is Philip and Franklin, his last tweet was at 5:10 on March 10th, and it said, quit asking UT fans posed as analysts / radio hosts about Will Levis. Just watch Richardson against Kentucky. He's terrible. I'm going to guess that March 10th was a Friday if he was saying that at 5:10 p.m. because that's probably when Chad Withrow was on the show, and that's probably who he was talking about. So I'm guessing Philip and Franklin is a Kentucky fan, and he's saying that Kentucky's loss yesterday has nothing to do with the coach. And that's fine. Because that was, you know, that the Kentucky-Kansas State game yesterday, in my opinion, was a typical NCAA tournament game that went right down to the wire, and these games can go either way. And it's all about who makes the shot or who doesn't make the shot, who does something stupid, who does the right, you know, gets the rebound, who boxes out, who, just like Arkansas and Kansas was. It came right down to the end, and Arkansas made a couple more plays. That's it. The problem is Kentucky hasn't been to a Sweet 16 since 2019. And at some point, that's Cal's fault. They haven't been to a Final Four since 2015. That's Cal's fault. And this whole thing about like, oh, well, you can't blame the coach for this one. I mean, at some point, when you're getting paid $1 jillion like John Calipari is, at some point you got to win. I mean, they don't give out those lifetime contracts for you to lose. And it is amazing that since Cal got his lifetime contract, Kentucky ain't done jack. But we'll get to that later. 615-737-1025. NFL free agency, the meat of it is now in the rearview mirror. Winners and losers, we'll get to that coming up next. Hey, is your bracket busted? Sign up and play the official 16-team game bracket challenge brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports, and the bluffs at Rocky Ridge. Enjoy the biggest and best views in the Nashville area from your dream acreage home site. Call now at 866-GET-LAND. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge or the Game Nashville app and pick your teams for a chance to win tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium on Saturday, April 15th. Hey, Preds fans, don't miss Wednesday night Smashville Live at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6. See your Predators star players up close and personal. Plus, get autographs and pictures. Preds player guests are Alexander Carrier and Jeremy Lauzon. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dolce Vita Tequila, pure and simple. So 1 week of NFL free agency is officially in the books. The meat is over. The money is gone. That's why C.J. Gardner-Johnson is signing for 1 year, $8 million. So with that, I think it's time to get into the official winners and losers of NFL free agency. And we start at the top.
Winner.
Cincinnati Bengals. Sure, they lost Jesse Bates. They lost Von Bell. But they did draft Dax Hill last year, and they did sign Nick Scott from the Rams, and it's safety. So, yeah, they lost that, but they played it patiently. And the cheap Bengals got Orlando Brown for well under market value. I mean, we're talking about a Super Bowl caliber left tackle for $16 million a season, and Laramie Tunsil for the Texans just signed $25 million a year to not win any games. So the top of the market's $25 million. They got their franchise left tackle for $16 million. They have receivers. They'll figure out running back. But for the last two offseasons, the Bengals have put the money into protecting Joe Burrow. It is yet to completely come to fruition, but they did get an impact left tackle, and they needed that, and now they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to try to draft it. They don't have to try to find it. The Bengals, who have almost no money, put it where their mouth is.
Loser.
The Dallas Cowboys. Look, Jerry doesn't like to spend money. Just because he has an obnoxiously elegant stadium does not mean that Jerry Jones likes to write fat checks. And this year, Jerry didn't do a lot, but his additions would have been great trades in 2018. Stephon Gilmore, he's over the hill. I think at this point in his career, I think Stephon Gilmore's a safety. I do not think he can run anymore. And so you think all of a sudden you're going to line up Stephon Gilmore on Devontae Smith or A.J. Brown or one or Terry McLaurin or one of these guys in that division, and you're going to get embarrassed because he can't run anymore. So they add Stephon Gilmore and they add Brandon Cooks. Now, I like Brandon Cooks, and the Texans are eating $6 million there of that guaranteed money. And I do think Cooks will be a dependable, you know, what Michael Gallup is supposed to be. That's what I think Cooks will be. But again, it's not 2018. It's not 2019. Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks are old. And Jerry just will not write checks. And because of that, I think with Zeke out of there now, it's all Tony Pollard coming off the injury. Dalton Schultz is gone. It's going to be a lot of Dak trying to carry the team. And I'm just not sure Dak can really carry the team.
Winner.
The Giants. Because they know Daniel Jones can't carry the team. But they kept their pair in Jones and Barkley. They traded for an impact number one tight end in Darren Waller, if he can stay on the field. They've kept Darius Slayton, who had a breakout year. The Giants, unlike the Cowboys, that are putting more eggs in Dak's basket. Even though the Giants paid Daniel Jones $40 million a year, they know Daniel Jones can't carry them there. So they are helping Daniel Jones out. And I think that will continue with the draft. I think they understand what they have in Daniel Jones. I think it's a lot like how the Titans have to build a team around Tannehill, except the Giants are putting their money where their mouth is. I think the Giants are a winner in free agency.
Loser.
The Eagles. Last year, the Eagles had an opening day payroll around $215 million. Well, Jalen Hurts is going to sign a massive extension this offseason. And when you do that and you win, everybody gets paid. So that's what's happened to the Eagles. Javon Hargrave got paid. He's gone. Isaac Suamalo goes to Pittsburgh. Gardner Minshew, the backup quarterback, is gone. Yes, they brought back Darius Slay on a reduced deal. They signed Jason Kelce. They brought back James Bradbury. I'm not even convinced James Bradbury's all that good. But they lost Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And he was a big part of their defense. And their team's getting older. And again, with Jalen Hurts, they're getting more expensive. So Philadelphia is either going to have to beef up the spending like a Cleveland or a Buffalo, or they're going to have to make cuts. And it feels like they're probably headed more for making cuts off of a team last year that competed right down to the wire for the title.
Winner.
Tommy Condon of CAA. A lot of people have incorrectly viewed Tommy Condon as kind of riding the coattails of his father, Tom Sr., who had Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Eli Manning and all these great clients. You know, the quarterback, kind of the quarterback agent. And people said, well, you know, he's just, you know, his dad built it. But Tommy Condon has slowly become a major player. He represented the top tackle on the market, Mike McGlinchey, who got more money to play right tackle than Orlando Brown Jr. got to play left tackle. Think about that. He also signed a huge deal with the Denver Broncos for pass rusher Zach Allen. And I thought this was kind of an under-the-radar move. Drew Locke, also a CAA Tommy Condon client, signed a one-year deal to remain in Seattle. And Seattle really, really likes what they have in Drew Locke. And so not only taking care of the client and putting them in positions where they can succeed is important, but getting mega deals in a free agency Monday, and which moved rather slowly in a free agency market that normally didn't have the big deals like I think we all expected. You got to give credit where credit's due. Tommy Condon at CAA, a winner of free agency.
Loser.
Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold had a sneaky good season last year. He's 4-2 as a starter. He had a 90-plus quarterback rating, and his QBR was better than Aaron Rodgers. And he takes a one-year, $4.5 million deal to maybe be the third quarterback in San Francisco? Why? I don't know the money on Gardner Minshew, but is it less than $4.5 million? Sam Darnold was actually good last year. You know, Baker Mayfield's going to be starting in Tampa. He wasn't even good last year. Remember when Carolina fired their coach? And then all of a sudden at the end of the year, because that division was so putrid, all of a sudden Carolina was competing for the division? That was Sam Darnold. And instead, 1 year, $4.5 million to San Francisco? I don't think we've heard the end of Sam Darnold, but I definitely thought Sam Darnold could have landed a better deal than that.
Winner.
The Jets. They get Aaron Rodgers. And while Aaron might be setting an NFL record for career narcissism, he is certainly an upgrade from Zach Wilson. And if anything came out of last week's ridiculous Pat McAfee show interview that Aaron did, it's that Aaron is pissed at the Green Bay Packers. And what do we know about Aaron? He's at his best when he's mad, when he's holding a grudge, which we know he holds consistently and all the time. Aaron's at his best when he's mad, and Aaron's mad at the Packers. Even though I don't know what the Packers did that was so bad, I almost feel like, you know, the Packers were kind of straight up with Aaron. The Packers have made it clear what they want to do, but that doesn't matter. All that goes on in Aaron's head is that he was wronged, and when Aaron Rodgers feels that way, Aaron Rodgers plays better. The Jets are going to get Aaron Rodgers. Good for the Jets.
Loser.
Lamar Jackson. Dude, the deal ain't there. I know you're better than Deshaun Watson. I get it. And I do wonder if this sentiment may even go all the way back to college, where Lamar won the Heisman, but Deshaun won the championship, and they were rivals in the ACC. They played a great primetime game, came right down to the wire, and Deshaun won at home. But, dude, the deal ain't there. He's made $40 million less over the last 2 years in cash than his draft class comp in Josh Allen. Lamar, go get an agent. Cut the bull crap out. It's time to get serious about your career. It's time to get serious about the money in your life. That $40 million that Josh Allen made over the last 2 years that you haven't, that money is never coming back to you. So get over the fact that Cleveland is stupid and they gave Deshaun that crazy contract. Go get your money. Let's go. Sign a top-of-the-market deal with the Ravens. Get $180 million guaranteed. Get $200 million in practical guarantees. Get a huge fat signing bonus, and let's go. But it's time for Lamar to take the L. Like, dude, the deal ain't there. This fully guaranteed contract, if you won't pay it, somebody, it's not there. And if it was, you'd have it by now. So I've got Lamar Jackson as a loser of free agency. And Ian, if we can get one more winner, because this is a little sneaky element.
Winner.
The NFL. And I'm going to tell you where the NFL won. Did you see this story about where the Washington Commanders are paying their signing bonuses? So if you sign a contract in the NFL and you give somebody a signing bonus, chances are that money's probably due within like 5 days. Like, okay, we're going to get a $6 million signing bonus. Give me the $6 million. The Commanders are not paying their signing bonuses until May. And the reason why they're not paying their signing bonuses until May, a lot of people speculate, is because the expectation is Daniel Snyder will sell the team. And then when Daniel Snyder sells the team, then the new owner will have to pay all of those signing bonuses. And if Daniel Snyder is not going to be in the NFL, good for the NFL. They're a winner of free agency. Those are our winners and our losers in NFL free agency. Speaking of rumors, there is a rumor surrounding the Titans that I certainly hadn't heard strongly enough to be able to talk about on the air. But somebody did. And it's a big one. And we'll get to that next. Stelman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.